Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Thanks so very much for tuning in on this Friday and each and every Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Mind, Your Body, and Spirit is brought to you by the Healthy Referral Newspaper, which many of you have had the opportunity to learn about. And we are so blessed through these 25 years to be given a mission that is huge, way bigger than we are, is the way that we normally say it. We want to express our gratitude to our listeners, to our readers, to those who support us in many, many ways. And as I mentioned, Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show is brought to you by our Healthy Referral Newspaper, which is a national, international, full-size newspaper dedicated to preventive and natural health, personal growth, and positive news. What we have done through the years has been beyond, I would say, beyond a mission that we could have even realized in the very beginning. The types of people that we meet from all over the world has been amazing and such an educational process, such a heartfelt process in many, many ways. We would like to give you our web address. For those of you who want to do a little further research on the Healthy Referral, that is simply www.healthy, just as it sounds, H-E-A-L-T-H-Y. Referral is R-E-F-E-R-R-A-L.com, so it's healthyreferral.com. You're welcome to call us after the show with any questions. Of course, as we do our interviews through this hour, you will have phone numbers and emails and web addresses of those that we are interviewing. And we always know that there are people who have questions for us after the show. So our phone number, the Healthy Referral Newspaper and Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show is 216-533-2273. Again, that's 216-533-2273. The email address is marciacm, as in Marie, at yahoo.com. So it reads marciacm at yahoo.com. On our description for our shows on the Blog Talk Radio Mind, Your Body, and Spirit web address that you can go to and learn more about the show, we have a wonderful description about our two amazing women that we are interviewing today. We actually had some calls the other day from a person who was reading the descriptions, and she had some questions for me in regards to the first interview that we are doing today, which is going to give you some amazing information about the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. And the questions that this person had after reading the description was just very heartwarming, because she has some things with children that has been going on for years. And when she read about what the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential has been doing for many, many years, actually I just simply say over 55 years approximately, she was really, really looking forward to the interview. So what I would like to do before we go ahead on to Janet Doman, who is the director of the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. I wanted to just give a little bit of a description. First of all, I want to express my gratitude to someone very, very special. And this person came into my life. She was introduced to me by my friend, Ann Anderson. Ann Anderson introduced me to Diane Phillips. Diane Phillips became a very close friend of mine, and she is the one who shared about the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential because of her many years of involvement with the Institutes. When Diane began to share with me about Janet and her father and the Institutes, I immediately went online to seek out the information and was totally, totally absorbed. I could not wait to read everything that I could on it. And, of course, I have children and they have children. And it became something very, very close to my heart. And the Institutes are located, of course, in many places. The headquarters is in Widmore, Philadelphia. They also have locations in other countries, and I will have Janet share more about that as we go along. But as we move along through the interview, I wanted to mention that the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential is a nonprofit and federally tax-exempt educational organization. And, you know, it has been serving children and teaching parents from all around the world since approximately 1955. And the goal of the Institutes is basically to significantly raise the ability of our children's intellectual capacity, physical capacity, and as well as socially. And the Institute's accomplishments have been many. And, you know, this goal by teaching parents how to create a very enriched environment at home, you know, where they can teach their children in a relaxed and happy, safe environment. The Institute's work began, and this is something that when I first read this, you know, I was amazed, and the fact of how it went from helping tremendously brain-injured children to realizing how this could be beneficial to well children as well. But the Institute's work began with brain-injured children, many of whom had been diagnosed with issues such as cerebral palsy, autism, developmental delay, Down syndrome, learning problems, and a host of other symptomatic issues. And in order to find solutions for these children and to give them help, the new field of what's called child brain development was created. And as new methods were discovered along the way, the hurt children began, you know, just being seen at the Institutes began to improve tremendously. And it's a significant number were even able to catch up, and this is what was really, really amazing for me to read, to catch up and go beyond their well peers intellectually, physically, or socially. And this clearly demonstrated that hurt children were not hopeless, as previously been assumed, and instead could be helped. It also proved something that for me was very important as well, and that was that well children may not have been as well as they should be. And the Institutes had spent over a half century pioneering new ways of making all children more capable and more confident. And the word confident for me after raising three children is a very, very, very crucial word. You know, and today the Institute is internationally known for its pioneering work on behalf of hurt children and its gentle, what's called gentle revolution to help all children achieve excellence. And I'm actually going to just stop there because I could go on and on, and I want to bring on Janet Doman, and Janet is the director of the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. I believe she is with us. Are you there, Janet?
I am indeed. That was a wonderful introduction. I don't know if I have anything more to say.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Are you kidding me? Oh, I mean, the fact that you are so, so dedicated – to, I mean, there's so many aspects of the Institutes, Janet, and the fact that you wanted to focus this interview today on the programs for newborn babies in the first 12 months of life, I felt was a wonderful place to start. And there is so much to share. To me, this is a topic, Janet, that you know, we could do, you know, one show and then do a continuation of several shows in order to cover all the amazing things that you do. So anyway, I just wanted to give you the opportunity, if you can tell a little bit about yourself and just how you found yourself involved where you are today.
Well, I think my path has been kind of inevitable. I was raised at the Institutes. My father and mother founded the Institutes when I was about 6 years old, so I had the great good fortune to be raised virtually my whole life on the campus of the Institutes here in Philadelphia. So for me, it was a very natural process. I was raised with stroke patients. Our early work was with stroke patients, and we had inpatients in those days, so I was raised with 60, 70, and 80-year-old stroke patients all around me who were being treated and who were being treated successfully. And so my earliest memories were that, of course, the brain can get hurt and it can get disastrously hurt, but that you can get better. As I got a little bit older, we began treating children, and so I really grew up with severely and profoundly brain-injured kids all around me, and that was a natural thing. You know, little kids, you think everybody gets to have the same experience as you do. It's not till later that you realize you had a pretty unusual upbringing. And for me, it was just entirely natural that I ended up side by side with my mother and my father.
So you had the wonderful opportunity to be around you know, people who had these issues in all ages. And I think that my experience and my children's experience through life has shown tremendous, just beautiful things that have come from them spending time in an environment like you just mentioned. There's something about that that is beyond measure, actually. And
well, you know, the world often assumes, quite incorrectly, that, you know, people say, oh, brain injured kids, that must be so depressing. It's just the opposite. You know, people who have huge battles that they have to fight, and a brain injured child is really having to solve all kinds of problems, often right from birth or in the first few years of birth, that no well child will ever have to confront. And the idea that these are sad or depressing kids is just the opposite. These kids are tremendously tough, tremendously brave, tremendously intelligent, completely the opposite of what the world thinks. Most hurt kids are very, very bright. And they are just amazing people to be with. So just the opposite of depressing, helping to fight side by side with kids who are hurt is one of the most inspiring things you could possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
A man does best in adversity. I mean, that's the reality. We really are foul weather creatures. And, you know, even a very small child, when confronted by a problem, will do his very best to fight his way through it.
Absolutely. And so when you were all in the beginning, starting out with working with the brain-injured children, and what actually took place to have you realize that, wow, this, yes, is helping our brain-injured children, but look what it's also able to do for children who are, quote, well.
Well, what really happened in the early 60s, we began teaching our hurt kids to read, and we began teaching them to read at earlier ages, because we felt that we realized how bright they were, and we realized that, you know, the stronger we could make them intellectually while we were trying to fix their physical problems, the better that would be for them. And we, by 1962, we had hundreds of severely brain-injured 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds who were reading their heads off. You know, they might be reading at a third or fourth grade level with complete comprehension, and what was most important, absolutely adored it, had become bookworms. And we had to look at our 4-year-olds and say, gee, the well 7-year-olds across the street in the city of Philadelphia often fail to learn to read at grade level, and here we have severely brain-injured kids who are reading their heads off.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, you couldn't look at that for very long before you had to say, well, what's wrong with our well kids? Their well kids are not as well as they ought to be. If hurt kids can read at 2, 3, and 4, certainly well kids should be given the same opportunity. And that was when my father wrote How to Teach Your Baby to Read. And Random House published that in 63. And it created quite a revolution when it came out. Mothers were quite surprised, and the words quickly spread to England and to Europe, and the book was translated, and you know, today it's in 25 languages, perhaps, maybe more. So, you know, mothers immediately embraced the notion and found that it was one of the most profoundly important things they could do for their babies.
You know, it's the part that I read initially, Janet, and then got into the book that you just mentioned. And once I started reading it, I absolutely could not put it down and wanted to get the rest of them as well, which I really still need to do because I do want to read through each and every one of them. But to see the ways in which the newborn children or babies are worked with also was just, it's so amazing what parents who sometimes can feel so, which they shouldn't, but the bottom line is they do, can feel often very inadequate about teaching their children, because society has pretty much, I feel anyway, played a major role in having parents feel like that, when in fact they're the best children, they're the best source of teaching their children.
Well, you're right. I think that mother, 87% of all women will be mothers at some point. And I believe if you polled that 87% who are mothers and asked each and every one of them, what's the single most important thing you've done in your life thus far? The vast majority, no matter what else they did, the vast majority will say the most important thing is I'm a mother. And we agree with them. If there's something more important than that in the whole world, I don't know what it is. And sadly, in present-day society, mothers are not valued. And that's a shame. But individually, if you talk to a woman who's a mother, she does value the fact that she's a mother and is proud of that fact. And it turns out that tiny kids, right from birth, can learn absolutely anything that we want to teach them, as long as we can do it in an honest, factual, and joyous way. And it turns out that mothers, and often fathers too, are the very best teachers that their children will ever have. So if you have the best student, and you do in the very young child, and you can put the best student in the whole world together with the best teacher, well, that sounds like an awfully good idea, doesn't it? That's the good Lord and Mother Nature having a good day. This system was dreamed up. And, you know, I think there is a legitimate overwhelm on the part of parents. I think when that first baby arrives, no one ever prepares a mother and father for that initial meeting with the baby. No one ever adequately says, your whole life is about to change in ways that you cannot imagine. and change utterly for the better. But I think it's a gigantic shock when parents are holding that baby for the first time and they look at the baby and they say, oh, my goodness, nobody told me you were going to be this smart. Because parents look at the baby immediately and they realize they've taken on this gigantic responsibility, and they realize the baby has huge potential, but they don't have any idea what to do about it. Just profound love, profound affinity. You know, I think parents look at the baby and they say, okay, I love you more than I love the man standing next to me, as much as I love him. Mm-hmm. I love you more than I've ever loved anything or anyone in my life. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't love you more than I love you right at this minute. And then they say, no, cancel that. It just got bigger.
Yes.
You know, and at some point, the waves just keep growing. Mothers finally say to themselves and fathers, you know, this is never going to stop growing. It just keeps getting bigger. They look at their 25-year-old and they say, you know, I mean, this is just too much, because it's such an amazing, profound response. And it's natural that they're overwhelmed when they have that first opportunity to see the baby. And by the way, I think we can imagine the baby himself is having his own pretty profound reaction. He may not be able to see mother very clearly or even hear her very clearly right at birth. But what he can see, what he can hear, what he can smell, what he can taste, he's saying, wow. Wow. So all we really need to do is supply mother and father with an owner's manual. You know, when you bring home a fancy computer, it comes with a big, fancy owner's manual, which we can barely read.
Oh,
but when the baby arrives, the baby, the human brain is so, the order of magnitude that the human brain is above the world's fanciest computer, I don't, you name it, Watson, the Blue Genie, you know, IBM supercomputers, the average baby born tonight in Philadelphia or Tampa or you name the city has a potential so far beyond that biggest, most powerful computer. And parents, I believe, instinctively and intuitively know that. They just don't have the owner's manual. And, you know, people kind of jokingly have said of us over the years, what the Institutes is doing is they're writing the owner's manual for the newborn. And that's really is what we're doing. You know,
I believe,
mom and dad, all you need is a little know-how. And the things you and your baby can do together are truly astonishing.
And also, Janet, I feel that parents trusting themselves, I raised three children. I have three grown children. We have two grandchildren. And one of the things that I always felt so deeply, because I enjoyed every moment. I'm one of these, I guess, blessed people, because not everyone maybe feels that way, but I wanted my children. And I felt intuitively, on an intuitive level, I felt that I knew everything that this child needs. And that is probably the case in many instances. And at the same time, we do need an energy such as what you all are doing at the Institutes to help bring out that best part of the parent, to have that parent trust his or herself and realize that, you know, I have these feelings, I have these instincts, and have the support to follow through, which in many cases, in following through, could be many, many things of what the Institutes, you know, is teaching. So, you know, I don't know what you feel about that, but, you know, it does go back to parents realizing that, hey, just maybe you have a lot more going for you in regards to this new little baby than you could have ever imagined.
Well, I think it's true, and I think also it's making sure that mom and baby get to be together, because there are many, many forces now that are pulling mom and baby apart right from the moment the baby arrives. And mothers, again, instinctively and intuitively feel that their baby is better off with them than any place else, and they're absolutely right. They're absolutely right. And this has become politically incorrect to say, even. But babies need their mothers. They need their mothers.
Yes, yes, yes. And there is no one more suited than, you know, than parents for that baby. And you are very, very correct in saying that there are more and more energies every day that are setting things up to distance, you know, the child or the baby from the parent. And people have to be really diligent. I knew just, you know, with some instances that happened with me when we was having my children and wanting to be really aware and alert that, you know, certain things didn't happen or certain things didn't take place that I would have preferred not, because I'm the one that has to say so. So it's an amazing journey. It really is. So when you all at the institutes are beginning to work with these little babies, what do you do first?
Well, actually, we teach parents, and it's parents who do the wonderful program. So all of our teaching is directly to mom and dad. And what we do first is we teach parents that we ought to look at the baby's environment right from birth with what's good for the baby. Too often, we adults have made the environment of the newborn an environment that suits us, that's convenient to our adult needs, but that they don't address the needs of the baby. The baby, right from birth, needs to have the opportunity to be in an environment where he can be on his belly, preferably naked or as close to naked as possible with the diaper, so that he can actually move. Modern babies are bundled up. Sometimes in a hospital, they'll be bundled up in 4 or even 5 blankets. They'll be put on their backs, staring at a ceiling with lights on that are on 24 hours a day. And the baby is bundled up like a mummy. He has just come out of an aqueous environment where he could move for 9 months, even kick and turn over. And now he's been bundled up like a mummy. He must wonder, have we lost our minds?
No wonder he wants to cry, right?
Well, of course. And what do we do in the hospital setting? He's not only bundled up in blankets and stuck on his back so he can't move, but we take him as far away from mother as possible so that when he starts crying for her, she will never come, for the basic reason that she can't hear him. And we put him in a room with 10 or 15 other babies who are all crying for their mothers. I mean, if we wanted to design a hell for a little baby, we couldn't do better than we're doing right now. Put him in a room where the lights are on 24 hours a day, where he can't reach his mother, where he can't move, where he's bundled up like a mummy. What a terrifying prospect. Instead of that, we propose that the baby be right next to mom, that the baby be in a warm environment, warm enough so that he doesn't have to be bundled up, so that he can be on his belly on a smooth, safe, warm floor, where immediately he can use all the propulsive movements he's been born with. After all, he has been moving for 9 months in utero. He can use all that movement to begin to crawl. You know, the Inuit babies, right at birth, are put on mother's naked body, and they crawl up mother's body to the breast. They literally crawl up and find the breast themselves. This is part of the Inuit tradition. So Inuit babies are crawling right from birth. The average Philadelphia baby won't crawl on his belly until he's 6 or 7 months old. Why? Because he will be utterly prevented from doing so. In fact, he's born with the ability to crawl, but because we rob him of opportunity, he quickly loses that ability. So it's a very important thing that right from birth, the baby has the opportunity to move. And we'll even make a little crawling track for our babies, which is padded a bit, and which can be even elevated at one end. And this gives the baby a little bit of an incline that he can crawl down. It makes it easier for the baby. Some parents actually put little crawling tracks around their bed. They put their mattress on the floor so that at night the baby can be free to crawl in the track and be close enough there. So if he needs to be nursed, mother can pick him up and nurse him and put him back. But that way, even at night, babies, tiny babies, actually move a lot at night, even more at night than during the day. So we want to put them in an environment where they don't spend the night with their head banged up against a crib, unable to move forward. So one of the first things we do, and one of the most important in the first few weeks of life, is we give the baby the opportunity, maximum opportunity on the floor. We bundle him up as little as we possibly can. We carry him around as little as possible. We stick him in a car seat as little as possible. In fact, we arrange the day around his mobility needs instead of around our convenience. And we feel, especially in the first 6 to 8 weeks of life, that our society needs to look at this time as a time when we really should provide a kind of cocoon for mother, in which she can be with the baby around the clock, where people are supporting her, of course, and helping her, but where she is not pulled out of the house, where the baby is not having to leave that cocoon, but to stay home, be on the floor with mom, build up that ability to crawl, and get in great shape.
When you're working with the little babies like this, and you mentioned the crawling track, which I did, of course, see in the book, that is, I know, one opportunity. And as I was going through the book to see all the additional opportunities that were created for the baby, it was just amazing. I mean, things that, again, if we as parents hadn't been taken so far away from our natural instincts, I looked at some of these in the book and I went, wow, you know, that makes perfect sense. And I never saw most of what I was seeing in these books from the Institute. So it was really, you know, the first time that I had laid my eyes on this, but yet the inner knowing and that intuitiveness of, you know, yes, that makes sense. And yes, we have been taken so far away in our adult form to what is much more natural. That's why when I was having my children, I remember having discussion after discussion with other moms, and I could see, Janet, that many of them were having difficulties in, as we said in the beginning of this interview, they were feeling certain things, but they were having a hard time trusting those instincts and those feelings. And to have something like what you're doing and the intention of the Institutes, to, in my opinion, the most important part of it all, and of course you're working with the parents, which in turn work with their children, you are bringing these parents to life. You know, you're bringing them to a place that maybe many of them had never ever touched on, maybe had an inkling, like we said, maybe had an intuitiveness about it, but yeah, there's this, you talk about the birthing process, it's like, wow, look what's going on with the parents as they're going through this process that you're sharing and enabling them to then turn and use with their little babies and their children as they grow. So, you know, it's, as I said in the beginning, it's very, very close to my heart, and there are no accidents. I believe that there are no accidents, and just a chain of events that took place for for me to meet Diane Phillips, and in turn telling me about the Institutes and me having immediate connection. I knew instantly that there was a definite purpose and a reason that all this was going on, and I just wish if I was to be into, you know, wishing, which I don't go there too often, you know, I would have loved to have had this available, you know, when I was first having my children. So now I have, my youngest grandchild is 4, so I had given the book to my daughter, you know, from the very beginning. So that's been a blessing.
Well, that's great. And I think, you know, we wouldn't want any parent not to follow their own intuition and their own instincts, because mostly when parents are left to their own instincts and intuitions, they're probably, mothers are right 99% of the time. It's really when we professionals kind of get in the way. So we, for that reason, we say strongly that if what we're saying appeals to mother as it appeals to you, then, and it feels right, then it's the right thing to do. But if it doesn't appeal, if a mother says, oh, I don't want to put my baby on the floor, I don't want to, that doesn't seem right to me, then we would say you shouldn't do that, because parents in the end, if the fate of kids has to rest with anyone, we believe strongly it should rest with parents. We trust parents. And parents should never do anything with their kids that they don't feel is the right thing and that they don't understand completely, whether it's what we're proposing or what anybody else proposes. So do we think every baby can learn? Yes, we do. But do we think what we say is for every parent? No, we don't. We think it's for those parents who are excited by it and who naturally say, this feels right to me. This feels like the right thing for me to be doing.
Absolutely. And listeners, we have been in conversation with Janet Doman, the director of the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. And we're coming to somewhat of a close right now. And what I would love for you to do, Janet, is to let the listeners know how they can best reach you and the Institute, so whether that's a website, a phone number, or both, or email, or whatever.
Well, we have a real live switchboard with a real live switchboard operator, so we love the direct contact with our parents, and whether a family has a hurt child, you mentioned all the labels that hurt children are given, whether it's a family of a hurt child or a family of a well baby, and you want to learn more about our work, you could call us. And we're in Philadelphia, and that's 215-233-2050, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. We give courses for parents of hurt kids throughout the year, and we give courses for parents of well kids. Also, we have a website. It's our initials, iahp.org. And you can, it's a very deep site, has hundreds of pages, so you can spend a long time there getting information. And,
yes.
You know, of course, you can write to us. We're in Philadelphia. And
That address is on the website, correct?
It is on the website.
Winmore, PA. So if you would be so kind to give the phone number of the Institute one more time.
Sure. It's 215-233-2050.
And I want to do a little reminder of what Janet already said, and that is feel free to call with any questions. This is, you know, what they love doing is to create that connection and for parents to realize the valuable role that they do play and how very important it is to not only your child, but also to you as parents. And that is, to me, the most, I'd say that's the biggest blessing, you know, for parents to feel competent that they can really teach their children. And Janet, I have, like I said in the beginning of the show, I feel that I will talk with you soon, and we should probably go ahead and set up like a part two or three or something like that to, you know, branch into some things a little bit deeper, because really we could have used the entire hour toward this, but we have.
Well, it's a big subject, and I'd be very happy to do that. And I'd love to talk about hurt kids as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So with that, I want to say thank you very, very much. And the beautiful thing about what's happening today is that this is a live show, and as you already know, it's immediately archived afterwards. So people are going to be able to pull up this particular show and listen to it whenever they want, other than it just being live. So that's going to be wonderful. Our archived, say that real, really quickly. our archive shows are being listened to a lot. We're getting wonderful results with that. So that's really wonderful. So I want to thank you, and I will definitely be giving you a call and talk again very soon. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome, Janet, and please tell Tammy thanks for all her help with this. I appreciated it very much.
I shall tell her. Thank you.
Okay, hon. You have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And again, that was Janet Dolman of the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential, the director there, and as she mentioned, her father is the person who founded the Institute. And it was back in 1955. Wonderful story. You have to go and read the story. We have another amazing woman. I know she's already on and is doing and has been doing some phenomenal work with people in regards to growing and being all that they are, healing also through different issues that they may have going on, whether it's, you know, emotional or just things in life that come and maybe create some trauma in different ways, and we all have that to some extent. I had the opportunity to hear from her and to speak with her and email back and forth, and I know Teresa Wolf is on the line. Are you there, Teresa?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, dear. Nice to hear you again.
Yes, nice to talk to you, too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You are doing, just a number of things, but one of the places I'd like to start today is you're doing amazing work with people and horses.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could please, first of all, just tell a little bit about yourself how you got to where you are at this moment in time and doing what you're doing.
Sure. Okay. Again, my name is Teresa Wolf, and I have a business called Soul Discovery on Horseback. I originally wanted to get into coaching many years ago, and I did coaching for businesses for several years, and I also did a lot of retreats. And I realized I would like to do the retreat business as a business as opposed to just on the side. And so I actually quit I had been an RN, and then I went on to join my husband in real estate, and we have a team that we built, which never really fulfilled me. I always wanted something different and more. So I decided I would go on to become a retreat coach, and in that process I always like to feel like I've received all the training necessary. So I found a coach who is in Colorado who trains coaches to become certified retreat coaches. So I went through that, and I started doing retreats, and I realized there was still one other thing I'd like to add to the mix, and that was horses. I actually grew up having horses, and I had horses as a young lady, but once we started having children, and my husband and I have 33 years of marriage under our belt, and now we have a grandchild. But once we started having children and everything, we realized it was just too much work to try to handle the horses and maintain a lifestyle that we had, and we both were working and having children and all that, and I'm sure people can identify with that. So what I've decided to do was get this training to become an equine facilitator, and through that, I realized I wanted to get more training, So I found another coach in Colorado who is a lady who coaches people to become retreat coaches on horseback. Or some people use the horses not for horseback riding, but more for therapy. Now, I have decided not to go the route of therapy. I realized that where I am in my life, I would like to have fun with people and help them to have fun and help them learn to have the vitality and excitement about getting up every day and feel really motivated and anxious about the future and in a good way. And so that's what I've decided to do, and that's where I am right now.
You know, I'm listening to you, and I heard very closely the part that you just said about, you know, wanting to have it be enjoyable and have fun. And, you know, that's a word, the word F-U-N, fun, that my business partner and I feel very strongly about, that it needs to be in the center of everything. And if a person isn't having fun, they really do need to look and go, whoops, you know, is this something I'm really supposed to be spending my time in if I'm not totally and thoroughly enjoying it? And I know when you and I first spoke, I had no doubt you enjoyed what you do.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah, yes. And it was actually came through very prominently on your, you know, on your web site and the information and so forth, too. So in regards to the horses, and I mean, the title of your business is absolutely beautiful. And in fact, excuse me, I'm so sorry. I was having this issue this morning. I'm going, boy, I hope my voice keeps moving through the day. you know, just the title itself says so very much. So when you go ahead and actually are working with people with the horses, what does that look like? I mean, you know, what do people do? Is it a place they go to? Is it an actual retreat environment or what?
Yes, I actually bring people to a ranch that I utilize that's about an hour west of Atlanta, actually east of Atlanta, sorry about that. And they have a bed and breakfast, and they have over 250 horses, but they do serve all three meals. So it's not just a bed and breakfast. It's actually a bed and all three meals and 250 horses. And so the beauty of that is I can bring ladies and couples and families to this particular location, and they do what they do best, which is the lodging and the food and the horses and taking care of them, while I get to spend my time doing what I do best, and that would be helping my clients become more self-aware, help them learn how to live in the present and in the moment, and how to become authentic. And the fun thing about that is the horse is actually the person. He's like a lie detector. Horses can tell if a person is not being authentic. I mean, if they sense that the person is saying something that's not true or not the case, they'll stomp the ground, they'll shake their head, or they may even walk away from the person. And so, you know, that's just who they are. That's how they're built. And the other thing about horses is they are beautiful and strong, yet they're very gentle animals. And to think that you can manage a 1,000-pound or 1,200-pound animal with just a little rope attached to their halter is amazing to me. But they want you to be the leader. The horse wants you to be the leader. They want you to be the person that directs where they go and what they're to do. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because a lot of times the people that I work with, they haven't felt that for a long time. They felt beaten up or trampled on, or they haven't felt much like a leader. And so this is an opportunity for them when they're either just leading the horse and grooming them or even riding with them, to give them an opportunity to feel like they are, again, more in charge of not just that animal, but of their life. And I think that's right. the beauty of using a horse.
Well, animals are so very, very, very instinctive. And, of course, so are we. And that's a little bit of what we were talking about in my interview before yours. It's just, you know, the intuitiveness that we have, and horses definitely have that, and they pick up. They're very, well, you already said it, you know, they may be a huge fairly large animal, but they're very, very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I may tell a story to authenticate what I just said, I had a lady come that, and again, I mean, what I do is very confidential, so I'm not saying names or anything, so this is an easy story for me to tell you. But I did have a lady that I worked with at one point who was feeling sort of beaten up in life and just felt like she just was out of control with some things. So we did the retreat together, and through the retreat, there were several things that we did, and I do things such as guided visualizations or a creative life visualization, or sometimes we do different types of meditations, or I'll do art therapy through dream boards, or we'll do a soul collage. So there's just a little example of some things. But the main thing that she and I did was we were both able to ride by ourselves because we were both experienced, so we didn't have to go with a guide. And sometimes that's where all the work is done, when you're out riding that horse, just the two of us. And she stopped me at one point and said, I want to thank you for allowing me to lead. I want to thank you for letting me do the things I didn't think I could do, like open the gate and close the gate, or while on top of the horse, or be in the front and make the decision about which way I'm going to go on the trail. And to me, that I didn't even think of that, but for her to acknowledge that and feel like what we did was so beneficial just really made my day. And that's the kind of thing that I just smile at.
Well, it is something to smile at, because, you know, it's a huge statement from the person, you know, expressing how far down inside it did reach, you know, for her. I'm assuming it was a she. Because are your retreats mostly for women?
Yes, the only time I bring men into the retreat is if I'm doing a couples retreat, and then I bring my husband as well. And because I feel like I can't do a retreat with couples being by myself. So, and he loves that. I mean, he loves doing it with me, and we've been in, you know, married 33 years, got married at 18 years old. We have, I mean, a lot of history, and we work together in the real estate field, so there's a lot of things that we can contribute as a couple to the couple. So that's the only time I admit. Well, I should say there is one other time, and that was when I did a family retreat one time with a husband and wife and their three children, and so there was a boy there, and then there was the husband.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, I just focus primarily on women.
Mm-hmm. Now, so people find out about the retreats through, I guess, through your site and through things like this that we're doing with this interview. And I know we're going to have some information. Well, there is information up on our healthyreferral.com website. How about if you give your web address as well, and along with any other contact information that you would like people to have?
Sure. My website address is www.souldiscovery.com. onhorseback.com. And so that's Soul Discovery onhorseback.com is my website. And again, I'll just say it one more time, www.souldiscoveryonhorseback.com. And then my email is Teresa, that's teresa@yourchosenpath.net. That's my coaching business, the Your Chosen Path, and the Soul Discovery on Horseback has been predominantly what I do now. So anyway, my email address again is teresa@yourchosenpath.net, and then my phone number is 770-843-9056.
This retreat center in Atlanta, is that northern part of Atlanta? Or?
No, it's directly east okay. of Atlanta. It's about an hour and 15 minutes from the airport, or about an hour from downtown Atlanta.
Okay. So your schedule is up on your website, correct?
Mm-hmm. I do have... My group retreats are on my website, The other thing that is also on my website is more information about the women's personal retreats, which that seems to be the most popular level of interest from the people that inquire. Is they're all, what I'm finding is that people are wanting personal retreats. They want something just for them, that's just created for them and around them and only with them. No other people are involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, the things that are drawing people in today's day and age, there are definitely more individuals, you know, families, couples who are looking to go ahead and spend more quality time, whether it's a personal retreat, you know, with themselves, just because of the many demands in so many ways that are going on the planet, you know, on people. So to have the kinds of things that you're doing, and that's why when I realized that I was having two very powerful women on this show today, you know, I thought, wow, this is really, really awesome. And in the thing that you feel is, let's just say, the strongest message that you like to communicate in regards to what it is that you do, what would you say that would be?
Well, I think the thing I would like to get across is that this is an opportunity for somebody, a woman, to feel heard without judgment, to get re-motivated, and I like to help them formulate a plan so they can take inspired action so they can achieve the life that they deserve. And I really call what I do, it's basically life coaching on horseback, and the horses are part of my team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that I'm looking forward to it. I was hoping to have done one that you recently have, but there's been so much going on that I'm going to definitely take a look at, you know, some things in the future, and I'll be talking with some very close friends of mine who are into all of these kinds of things as well, and they have been going into our Blog Talk Radio, Mind Your Body and Spirit website, and listening to all the shows, which many people are doing. So that's the joy of having the interviews, you know, archived so that people can go in after this live show and hear and on their own time, you know, and mm-hmm. listen to things. So that I know is what's taking place and is continuing to expand immensely when we go in and take a peek at the numbers of listeners for the archive shows. So that's going to be, you know, just staying around for quite a while. In fact, the technology today is very exciting because it enables you know, things like archive shows to continue to be available for as long as we choose to have that happen. So, mm-hmm. So you basically, you know, you're ready to answer any questions. People can feel comfortable with just giving you a call.
Absolutely. I invite questions. I invite people to ask me to give them a quote because everything is personal and custom. I do a detailed interview first to find out what they're trying to achieve, and then I'm able to develop a plan of action and a proposal. And we can do a retreat from a one-day retreat that's not even overnight all the way up to a 10-day retreat. So I just feel like it's such a fabulous opportunity to really redefine who we are and what to look forward to and how we can feel like we're ready for jumping out of bed that day. And there's just, I mean, for me, I can't wait to go to work. And that's what I want everybody to feel like.
Absolutely. One more time, give your website if you would again.
www.souldiscoveryonhorseback.com.
Wonderful. Okay, listeners, make sure that you take a moment to go in and take a peek at that and give Teresa a send off with an email or a phone call. And Teresa, I want to say thanks so much. And you and I, of course, will be talking because there's some other things that you know, put together.
Mm-hmm. And thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, dear. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. And thanks for listening to Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show, and we will see you next week. Any questions, give us a call at 216-533-2273. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.